Welcome to Shrink Wrap, a podcast where Fran and Becky give proper respect to various mental health and wellness topics
while adding in a little bit of smart assery that they just can't seem to contain.
This podcast cannot and does not constitute therapy advice.
However, we do hope that you find the information we share with you helpful and entertaining.
Please be advised that this podcast discusses topics that can be sensitive to some listeners. Use appropriate discretion.
Welcome.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's recording day.
And this is a special recording day.
It is a special recording day. It's our first guest of season four.
It really is.
Ooh,
yay.
Doggy.
Yes.
Yes.
But first, housekeeping. Sorry to be a buzzkill. But if you like what you are listening to here or like what you're about to listen to, then please go smash that like and subscribe button. Get notified wherever you are listening to this podcast, because it certainly helps get us out there. And reviews are always good. These two ladies' egos are very fragile. So 5-star reviews only, and tell them how beautiful they are.
Fragile.
Fragile. Must be French.
You're so nice. I would like to just follow that up with leave a fucking review and give us fucking 5
wow.
stars.
Wow.
No, guys, seriously, it just really helps get our podcast out there.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. We just really appreciate it. Brody's so nice. Everybody says that. He's always so kind and yeah.
Yeah. I'm really just bringing the show down.
Yeah.
I'm not sticking to the brand here.
Yeah. So if you are a wannabe podcast producer, no, I'm just kidding. Nobody else will put up with us.
No kidding. Yeah.
So what are we talking about today, Fran?
We are talking about, here's the title, PTSD in a veteran population with a special guest.
With a special guest. We have a bona fide expert in the studio with us, Dr. Rosalie Ball. She has her PhD in clinical psychology from the good old University of South Dakota. Go Yotes.
Go Yotes. Yes.
She did her internship at the Fort Meade VA healthcare system from 2014 to 2015. She has been a staff psychologist for the Aberdeen VA clinic from 2015 to just May of this year, 8 years.
Yes.
She is the MST coordinator for the Sioux Falls VA healthcare system. And as if she's not busy enough, she's been past president for the South Dakota Psychological Association and is currently on the South Dakota State Licensing Ethics Board. Holy
wow.
Hannah! Do we have to call you Dr. Ball?
Yes, no. I hope so.
Okay. Okay.
I think we should.
Okay.
I'm not going to. Can I call you Rosalie?
Yes.
Is it Rosalie or Rosalie? Rosalie.
Yep.
Okay.
Rosalie? Who the hell names their kid Rosalie?
I don't know. I just get confused.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Only on the south side of Chicago do they say Razzle.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Frantastic Factoid.
So, let's talk about comorbidity with PTSD and alcohol use. And here's some stats. In the general population, the comorbidity is 8% with a history. No, 8% in the general population. But if you have PTSD, that jumps up to 35% of men and 27% of women. But wait a minute. If you've served in Afghanistan or Iraq, the comorbidity between alcohol use and drug use and PTSD jumps to 55 to 75%.
I agree with the closer to 75%. I got to be honest.
That's high.
Yeah, just what I've seen. My participation, not currently, but in the past with the Given Hour Association.
Yeah.
A lot of the veterans that came to see me were dealing with alcohol use issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a symptom of PTSD within the cluster of avoidance, right? It's mm-hmm. a way to numb your emotion.
And I'm going to stick the microphone.
Step
microphone.
The mic.
I'm too Rosalie Schnaz.
I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah. So definitely seeing a lot of that. And it's nice because when working in the VA, they have a substance use disorder clinic. Mm-hmm. So I can send them to get assessment. And it's been really great with COVID that there's more telework. Yes. They were not doing any groups. So if you wanted to do their intensive outpatient program, you had to drive all the way to Sioux Falls and live there, mm-hmm. you know, which doesn't really make sense if you're trying to keep your job.
Right.
You
know? Right.
So, yeah.
So, Rosalie did not prepare for this at all. She's kind of an underachiever. I mean, no. She just scratched everything out on
she
a
did.
Napkin.
Or I may have had to change the ink cartridge in my printer.
We have a 24 page outline. No, I'm joking.
It is 9.
And okay? We never exaggerate ever.
So we are going to let you kind of begin however you would like to. And then Becky and I will be rude and interrupt like we normally do. Yeah, you know, yeah. We're just going to be us.
How about this? I brought a gift.
What?
Just to be silly.
In a great big light blue gift bag. Okay. It's huge.
It's a bag.
It's a bag. Fran thinks it's a dildo.
No, I said it's an oscillator.
She hopes it's a dildo. She already has the oscillator.
So you go ahead and open it. You're very excited.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. First of all, this is so nice because we never get gifts.
Well, we haven't opened it yet. Let's wait before we say it's nice.
I'm trying to go down in history as your favorite guest.
Oh my god, and it's wavy. Oh my god, you guys.
You gotta have wavy. Oh my god.
You guys, we have top wavy.
The tater.
And some top the tater.
Oh, yes. Wow. That
not
is
sponsored,
awesome.
Just a fan. Great job, Rosalie. What a great gift.
You know, you can tell I listened to your podcast for one, and yes. I'm very organized, and I just thought that'd be a good way to start.
Before we got on the air, Becky goes, have you ever listened? And Rosalie gave this very, like, pregnant pause of, like, yeah. It turns out she's right.
I always like to say, have you had the opportunity? Because I do a podcast. I don't listen to many podcasts. Mm-hmm. So I never judge if people haven't listened to our podcast. But mm-hmm. Rosalie, you clearly have.
Oh, I love it.
And I love it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So are
have
we
you
gonna
tried
be...
Top the Tater yet?
Yes.
Okay. I gotta do a quick side story on the Top the Tater because you guys will be disappointed in me.
Okay.
So literally, like within the last month or so, I had my husband pick up groceries, which is pretty rare in our house. I'm usually mm-hmm. the one that does that. And so he brought home chips. I said, I wanted chips and dip. And I said, why did you buy Top the Tater? I'm not making potatoes. And he's like, Rose, it's just like French onion dip. But and I was pissed at him. Like, ooh. I literally was like, this is bullshit. Yeah. You didn't get the right thing.
This
and
is
as being
the
sassy,
here we go.
As being sassy, and I tried it and
see.
Rock. I'm sorry.
This is going to change your world, but did you know that chips are potatoes? They're just different. So, really, it all works.
Mind blown.
Yeah. Right.
More cutting edge facts from this trash. Oh, gosh. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, that's super sweet.
Love it.
So why don't we start out with what is PTSD? What does that stand for?
What's it stand for?
Yeah.
Man, we could spend the whole day just talking about that because it is a complex diagnosis. And I like to spend a whole session with my vets talking about that. But I'll do Reader's Digest here because there's 20 symptoms of PTSD and there's 4 symptom clusters. And so I like to make it complicated. Mm-hmm. You have to be exposed to trauma and you have to have 2 of each of these symptom clusters.
Mm-hmm.
And the VA is very picky about that with diagnostic because obviously there is some financial gain to if you have the diagnosis and depending on the severity of it. Exposure to trauma, you know, discussing what is trauma, you know, the PTSD diagnosis didn't come into our diagnostic and statistical manual till 1986. And the definition of trauma has changed across time. Yeah. So it seems like the DSM is changing a lot. Mm-hmm. When I was in school, it was the DSM-4 text revision.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it was exposure to death or the fear of dying.
Mm-hmm.
And then 9/11 happened, right? And we're all watching live people jumping out of windows. Mm-hmm. And so they changed the definition to you could witness it.
Mm-hmm.
And now they changed it again in the DSM-5-TR to... it can be an indirect exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think of like all the different vets that I have had, of course you think of sexual trauma, you think of combat and those types of things, but you don't think about the person that has to go to your door and tell you that your dad just died,
mm-hmm.
you know, or the person that has to put the body on the boat,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so there's a lot of different kind of secondary traumas or even the person who's building a bomb that is going to kill somebody, mm-hmm. you know? And so looking at that trauma, you got to be a little more flexible with that.
Just from a nerd historical standpoint, do you know what it was called? So Vietnam vets, what were they diagnosed with? If PTSD didn't get a name until the 80s, what do you know? What it? I mean, Fran, I'm sure you helped to write it at this point.
But yeah. Because I'm old. See, yeah.
Well, I think one of them was combat fatigue. That was one of
them. And before that, it was shell shock.
Shell shock.
And that I think is, and Fran and I were speaking about this earlier, is that even vets, I feel like, don't have a very good understanding of what PTSD is. They think of shell shock like it's the person that flips out if the fireworks are going off.
Right.
And that's just one of its 20 symptoms. Like, it can look very different than that. And so whatever the trauma is, the first cluster is re-experiencing. So it's coming back to you in a way that is distressing and intrusive to you. And so that could be if there's a reminder, you know, maybe it's when you're driving your car and there's like debris on the side of the road, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a lot of the Afghanistan, Iraqi veterans, there are IEDs, mm-hmm. Which I didn't know what an IED was because I'm a civilian before I worked with vets, but it's an improvised explosive device. And so they would put them in dead animals. And so that is a trigger for folks that there might be something going on there. And so then you can either have a flashback where you're there or you're just kind of off. Well, if wife's talking to me about, we have a soccer game next weekend and I need you to pick up milk, right? This can cause some conflict within the relationship.
Or if they didn't get the right dip for the potatoes.
That can cause conflict.
That really can.
Yeah. Understandably so.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we hear of nightmares. That can be another way of re-experiencing. People can try to push those thoughts away, but when you sleep, right, you don't have as much control over that. And so, yeah, people avoid, we already talked about the comorbidity with alcohol and drug use. And people can use that to suppress their emotions and kind of numb those feelings. They can then start to avoid, it's a very natural thing to want to avoid the things that are going to trigger you. And so, again, I spend a whole session on just that. Like, what are your triggers? You know, what is it? And that can be kind of surprising. I had one couple that came in, the spouse came in and said, my wife says I need to be here. It's like, okay, well, what's going on? Well, I'm angry a lot. Okay, well, what's kind of going on? When do you get angry? And it turned out after a session, like, dude, you have PTSD. And it would really be when they're getting ready to leave and to drive. He was the person that drove the convoy. And so there's a lot of like control issues about when we need to leave and what we need to have and, you know, making sure we're safe and being able to control that to the point that he'd get very irritable, which is also a symptom of PTSD under the arousal cluster, that irritability. It's hard to concentrate and focus. And yeah, it can make you not be a very good parent if you have minimal frustration tolerance and then not really get along with your spouse.
I think it probably makes you a great fellow soldier. Right? All of those things, making sure everything's lined up. But I think there has to be such a tough transition from being in that, whether it's 6, 8, 10, 18 months, and then you come home and you have to turn it all off.
Right.
It could be really hard.
And I feel like they, meaning the military does such a great job training you to get into that mindset, but there isn't really that like reverse process. And then, you know, with military culture, you have such a great camaraderie and we're all in this together. And then you come back here.
Yeah. And you're isolated and a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's wonderful if we can get folks. I didn't put this stat in the outline, not that it matters, but I'm going to say it, is that it averagely takes vets 8 years to walk in to treatment from when they have the diagnosis.
Boy, there's a lot that can happen in that time.
Yeah. You lose your family, you know, a lot of them end up divorced. Yes. Or your life or your job or, even get in trouble with the law.
So when I worked at the Fort Meade VA, I got to do a rotation on the inpatient unit. And so I was seeing 20 and 30 year olds who are living this. And then like in the outpatient setting, I'm seeing 70 year olds who are telling me the story of what that was like in their 20s and how they lost their wife and they don't speak to any of their children. Mm-hmm. And so it's, I always really try to praise people who have come in already. Like, this is wonderful that you're able to do this now. Or even the people that come in their 70s, like, at least now you can live the rest of your marriage in a better place, mm-hmm. you know, and move forward.
Yeah. So I don't think it's ever too early to get treatment for this, and I don't think it's ever too late.
So what's the barrier? Why is there that 8-year barrier? Is it because they're not recognizing that something's wrong? Is it because there's mental health stigma with vets in particular? Like, what is the gap there?
You know, there's probably a lot of answers to that question. For sure, stigma. Especially like if you're still in the military, like Aberdeen has a larger population of mm-hmm. National Guard members.
We do.
And so you will be put on a profile. And so they get really worried. Like, if I come to see you, what's going to happen when we get deployed next year? And so I have mm-hmm. a few that I saw and then they were deployed and, or you can be on meds and be deployed. Mm-hmm. But I think there's always that worry in the back of your mind. Like, if I get that diagnosis, what's that going to mean? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people will pause that until they're out. Mm-hmm. And then also just, you know, if you're a leader, I think it's harder too, because you feel like you need to keep it together for everybody else. Mm-hmm. And then also just the kind of the culture of the military that we just need to suck it up mm-hmm. and pull it up by your bootstraps, you know.
And that's worked great. Mm-hmm. Insert sarcasm.
What about gender differences, like with PTSD? Do you notice any distinct things, or is it more things in common than different?
Well, as far as the trauma, there is a lot of military sexual trauma. And again, that probably comes from if most military operations, not really the guards, but Army, Navy, you're living together in these small confined mm-hmm. spaces with a very small, women are the minority then. And I did a presentation on women veterans and I had a vet as a guest speaker. And so now when you're deployed, women are in a totally separate building. And so I'm like, wow, that's great. That's really going to prevent that. And she actually saw it as a barrier to, I'm not really one of the guys and mm-hmm. I miss things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, oh, we were supposed to do this thing, but I miss that conversation. Mm. You know, so it's like we're trying to get better at this and identify it and report it. It's better mm-hmm. than it was before, but it's still not perfect, mm-hmm. you know. So, yeah.
And one of the things I always think about, because I'm always about mandatory reporting, is that if you're sexually assaulted in the military, you report up the chain of command, correct? Or is that different now? Have they now made it so that you report outside the military? How does that go?
I know they have trainings at the beginning of like where you're supposed to go. I'm not exactly sure. I think you can go anywhere in the chain, you know, because sometimes the person that is perpetrating is your leadership mm-hmm. and your supervisor, you know. And a lot of times, too, people might, you know, they might be a likable person. I know you guys have done some podcasts on, mm-hmm. like, narcissism, and they can be quite charming and brush things under the rug. And mm-hmm. so, you know, but the difference between, I think, men and women is, you know, you have more of that betrayal trauma. Mm-hmm. And so it really kicks them about being in the VA and being a vet. And then also coming into the VA too, a lot of times I try to really be careful if a couple is coming in, like, who's the vet? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of assumption that, what, are you here for your dad? Like, where's mm-hmm. your grandpa at? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we serve too. Women serve too. So, right. As far as the presentation, I think it's very similar, mm-hmm. you know, between men and women.
Mm. Okay.
What else? So
would you outline just some of those other clusters? Maybe you're getting yes. there, but just as.
Right. Cause so we did
20 different characteristics or
I know.
Checkpoints.
Yeah, we did. So we did re-experiencing where it comes back. We did avoidance where you try to, you know, help avoid, the other two symptom clusters are hyper arousal and negative thoughts or feelings. So I guess maybe just starting with hyper arousal, that's where, you know, and here there's one, two, three. there's seven different symptoms, right? So you need two of them. So this could look different depending on the patient. And a lot of times we see irritability and aggression, which particularly with a veteran population, I would say is usually very enhanced. We're seeing like homicidal thoughts and aggression and outbursts and things like that. Doesn't necessarily mean you have PTSD if you're irritable or aggressive, mm-hmm. but it can be one of the symptoms because you're always on guard. You know, mm-hmm. you do not feel safe. Heightened startle reaction, that is that shell shock where something unexpected, like if you were to come up behind them and touch them, you might get smacked.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many stories where I've heard vets accidentally have broken their spouse's nose, you know, if they try to wake them up at night because they're having a nightmare, you know. Mm-hmm. The difficulties concentrating, right? It's going to be difficult to follow this conversation if I'm anxious and I'm thinking about, you know, what it is that's making me anxious. So that really makes sense. And I see this a lot with my 20-year-olds that come in and are trying to utilize the GI Bill. Like they're struggling at school.
Yeah.
And so kind of looking at, is this like a learning disability? Do you have ADHD or, you know, is there something else going on related to your anxiety? Frequently scanning the environment. So this is something with vets. I can usually tell when I'm getting them from the waiting room. That's an observation. I'm just going to let all you know, former mm-hmm. patients, I'm observing you from the time I come and get you. Mm-hmm. Like, where are you sitting? Mm-hmm. Like, is your back to the door? Like, and asking the question, you know, if you're at a restaurant, where do you sit? You know,
always on the back with your back to the wall.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, I know why, but I ask them why you do that, you know, and what's that about? And feeling that sense of safety. And people will leave. And actually today, when I was actually getting your top of the tater, I noticed that there was a cart in the middle of the aisle that mm-hmm. was left unattended. And I've had many patients have a panic attack in the middle of a store
mm-hmm.
and lose their shit and leave.
Yeah.
And so it kind of gave me goosebumps walking by that. Cause I'm like, kind of looking around, like maybe mm-hmm. she went around the corner mm-hmm. or maybe she had a panic attack and left.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never know what someone's going through. Like, why are they, you know, being irritable? Like, you don't really know what's going through their head. Difficulty sleeping. This is also, people will come into primary care because they're having a hard time sleeping. And if you're very over alert and aroused, how can you shut that down?
Right.
You know, and oftentimes we'll have to use medications to help get them back to some sense of homeostasis so that they can do this work of therapy to get them in a good place. Feelings of anxiety, right? Rapid heart rate, things like that. So you really have to differentiate, is this normal anxiety or is this related to PTSD? And then risky or impulsive behaviors. And what you, like an example of that is I might not be attempting suicide, but I will ride my motorcycle 100 miles an hour because I really don't give a shit mm-hmm. if I die.
Yeah.
You know, it's just this kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, that just risky, you know, you kind of had that maybe. And I see that more with guys in combat, you know, that high to, you know, do something risky.
I would think like with this diagnosis in particular, it would be so helpful to have a family member come in as a collateral contact to give like, what exactly are you observing at home? Because mm-hmm. so many people, I mean, even in marital therapy, right? You have your own story and your own perceptions of how you act in your home setting or in public or whatever. And of course, we always want to make ourselves look good and we minimize things. Mm-hmm. But I would think with this population, in particular, maybe not realizing how their behavior is exaggerated, like the withdrawal, like going to bed the minute they get home from work and not spending any time with the kids day after day after day after day, you know, having the way for the partner come in and say, okay, this is what I'm observing would be really helpful. How often do you get to have like that collateral piece?
Not as often as I'd like. But I always try to encourage them if I know they're in a relationship to bring their spouse in mm-hmm. right now. If they have a traumatic brain injury, I'm going to really require, like, I need you to bring somebody else because you might not be a very reliable historian to mm-hmm. give that. Right. But yes, I always try to encourage people, bring your spouse and bring your spouse during this session where I give them this handout and we highlight circle, star, which symptoms you have, because they may not identify that this was PTSD.
So that's a really lengthy, detailed list, but I feel like PTSD gets thrown around a lot. Flippantly, I guess.
Yeah.
Does that sort of the stigma of it? I mean, there's stigma all over, but specifically with this one, does that play in? Or I mean, if you really think you're a candidate for PTSD, you're pretty serious about it.
Yeah, I think it's almost become like, oh, you're so OCD. Like, we know if you're
agreed.
In the mental health field, you know, no, that's not OCD. You know, OCD is where you can't get rid of a thought. And there's a compulsion to do something. And same with PTSD. And, you know, I think sometimes people come in really very convinced that they have it. And they just want me to confirm that. And they become very pissed. I mean, I've literally had people threaten to kill me because I have said, you know, you don't have these symptoms. And but I think we could work on maybe some other things. It's very like convincing that I am a veteran with PTSD. There's like meaning to that. And, you know,
like street cred maybe.
Yeah.
It's interesting. That's like the opposite of what I was thinking. Interesting. Yeah.
Which, right. But then there's, and maybe that's the younger generation. And, and then like the older guys are, man, it's so crazy how someone you're very much like, you're the one that needs to come in and get like 100% service connected because your PTSD is so bad. And they're just like, well, I'm fine. And, and I don't have it. And there's other guys worse off than me. And it's like very much like, no.
I will say working with the college population, even in the 7 months I've been back at Northern, I've had intakes where, what are you, you know, requesting to be seen for PTSD? And I get them in and you're like, tell me about your trauma. And they're like, I had a professor yell at me last semester. And and so I always say, I'm not going to say that wasn't traumatic because I can see where that would be very traumatic. That does not meet the criteria for PTSD,
right?
But we can.
How do you do that, Becky? How do you do that with a straight face?
Because it is traumatic for them.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, for real, that's how I do it. It is traumatic for them.
I love that you honor their perception because it would be easy to be very sarcastic about it. Yeah. Not that I would ever be sarcastic, honestly, but there are those people.
You wouldn't be in a session. I know you wouldn't
be. No, but you can see how it kind of throws you because we have our preconceived notion about what PTSD is, right?
If you've worked with the military, if you've worked, like I work with law enforcement, But no, it's traumatic for them, so you honor that.
Absolutely.
But I always like to clarify, this is not PTSD.
Right. Yeah. But that's a really important point, Brody, because we do throw these terms around and everybody now has social media and TikTok, right? And so now we think we have these things, right? And it just gets thrown around lightly sometimes.
So rabbit hole, Rosalie, I'm hearing a lot of complex PTSD. People don't even have just PTSD anymore. Anybody that's coming in, it's like, no, I don't have the regular PTSD. I have the complex PTSD. Can you tell us more about that?
Right. And so complex PTSD is where a lot of times when we think of PTSD, it's one traumatic event, right? My professor yelled at me, my, you know,
or I was involved in one shooting or.
Right. Something or, you know, the drowning at Wiley Park, you know, like things that stand out in your mind. But complex trauma is repeated, you know, over time. And, you know, so it could be childhood sexual trauma. And so they're seeing almost like a different set of cluster. I mean, it's similar, but it's more profound. Like it almost gets embedded into your personality and the way that you trust people.
Did you guys watch The Crowded Room?
No.
Oh, it's on Apple TV starring Tom Holland. And it's more like multiple personality, but it's got all of that as well. It is so good.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah,
it's now, awesome. I always think I had a classmate from high school who went into the Marines in the early 90s, right after we graduated. And he was in, like, think of every awful conflict you can think of between 1990 and 2005.
There
and
were many.
His unit went to all of them. The genocide in Rwanda. They were there. So he finally decides to get out. Yay him. He signs up for the Army and he is a he gives the notification of death to families. And I literally said, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, right?
Probably don't tell you that when you sign the line. That's yeah. what right. gonna do.
So we had a little talk about what the fuck, and now he doesn't do that either. But
yeah,
but it's like what he knew. And I think it was that, I think he was so used to being down that that's just what he knew.
Hey, Becky, why is the Northern State University graduate program in counseling so awesome?
I could go on forever, but let's talk about the fact that you can get a clinical degree where you can work in private practice or an agency, or you can get a school counseling degree on the school track where you can work in a school as private school, parochial school, public school, any school you want to. And then my favorite.
What?
Forensic counseling.
Super cool. Yes. But is it KCREP approved?
It is KCREP approved. And you're like, what does that mean? You know what? It means that it has the gold standard of grad schools.
Super awesome. But can I afford it? Because I don't have a lot of money.
It's okay. If you go to northern.edu, you can apply for some scholarships. They have a couple of counseling specific scholarships in addition to some other really fantastic scholarships that a guidance counselor or a admissions counselor can help you with.
Awesome. Be Northern, unleash your potential, baby. And I just think when you're talking about repeated trauma and the term complex PTSD, it's cumulative. You know, if you've been sexually abused as a child and then you go to college and you get raped and then you go in the military, it's just cumulative.
Right.
The wear and tear of that, the re-traumatization is...
Or you go from one conflict to another conflict to another conflict.
Yeah, multiple deployments, which are happening more often now, especially that we're calling on National Guard for deployment. First responders are a big one, and there's actually like West River, they have their own kind of, I don't know, group that is reaching out for first responders and wanting, you know, to get providers that specialize in that because it does look different. And so I've had folks come in that, you know, are firemen or policemen, and you know, it just, it looks kind of different. And I feel like you lose them a lot easier because they're like, how the hell do you get it? You know? And so,
And I think a lot of our first responders, or at least a lot of the ones I know, are also either active or former military.
I think about
there's that crossover.
NESD conference last year. We have a great conference in Aberdeen, South Dakota.
Coming up this October.
Okay. And last year, remember we talked about, was it the Jessica Goebel?
Yeah.
The one where she was stabbed, right?
Yeah. Jessica Goebel.
Like how many... 52 times, I don't know, something.
That was a lot.
Yes. Yeah. And the first responder, the man that actually showed up, it's like, I'm still traumatized just by hearing that story. Like a lot of that, what we cover is so difficult, but I can't imagine being the first one on site. I mean, it's just life changing in that moment.
I could go on and on and on about first responders. I mean, we have a lot of them that will respond to that. Our APD is actually pretty good, but there are other law enforcement agencies that you respond to something like that. And you are expected, if you're on duty the next day, you're expected to go and pretend like you didn't see somebody just, you know, shoot themselves in front of you or, you know, a really bad domestic or whatever it might be.
Which not too long ago, they had one of their staff commit suicide and they had to respond to it. And that just makes me think my hometown is Woonsocket, and, there were four young boys who perished in a car accident. That was just, we call it the 3 mile corner. So it's just 3 miles out of town. And all the first responders knew them. Like, so that like is just like another layer of like,
it is
in rural America, you know, we have a shortage of providers as we all know. And so you're having to kind of have these multiple relationships. And I just feel so bad for these EMTs and just have such respect for them, especially in these small towns where
you
might know that person.
Yes. And their families and having to tell the families that, you know, that, oh God.
That's so we do have a critical incident stress management team that takes care of the northeast corner of the state. A lot of our smaller towns are really good about utilizing us. They will call out and say, we had a really bad call, whatever. We knew whatever, you know, it was farmer so-and-so, went to high school with half of our fire department or whatever. And then we go and do a debriefing on that. So that's really good. But getting back to the military, it would almost be nice if we could have some of those things. for our military vets.
Mm-hmm. A debriefing, like you're talking about.
Yeah, I feel like in bigger cities maybe, and maybe I'm just assuming that, Rosalie, but I feel like if you're in Minneapolis or Atlanta, that maybe there are some of those really big resources, but maybe not even there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of outside of my knowledge, what like current military, what kind of services that they have. Excuse me, there was a suicide in town and they reached out like, hey, VA, can you come speak to us? And the VA, I mean, there's just so much red tape is like, well, you know, we can't.
Yeah.
They have to use military one source. And so it's just like, wow. I mean, that would have been a really great opportunity for them to develop a relationship with the VA and that trust and camaraderie. Mm-hmm. But
that's how Givenhour actually got started, is they wanted an organization that could respond to veterans that had no red tape.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, a lot of us worked with the VA because Givenhour is just 1 hour of counseling a week. You know, we don't have all the other resources that the VA has possible, but there's no paper trail and nothing follows.
And same with the vet center. That is a good way if you're current National Guard, where your paperwork is separate from your file, you know, because that was something we actually came across, an ethical dilemma where the guard unit called to get the documentation from the therapist, and the therapist did not realize that when they were discussing confidentiality with the patient that the unit could get that for the profile review. So it was not good, you know, and you just think of like the trust that you create with a patient was probably just destroyed.
Right.
And that person will probably never get help. But the other symptom cluster, which I think goes really well into like treatment, are the way that perceptions shift, you know, of the world and yourself and others. And so that's a big part of our treatment, is looking at how those thoughts have changed. And that's almost like a new symptom cluster that came out in 2015. And for those of us that have been treating PTSD before that, we knew that was part of PTSD.
Right.
It just wasn't clarified in the diagnosis. And you know, our diagnostic manual is by the American Psychiatric Association. It's a constantly like morphing kind of beast of like nosology. Like, what are we going to call that? You know, just like we knew what PTSD was. I mean, I think it's been since antiquity that we've had that, you know, in like BC, like, you know, like all in wars. How do
back
people
in France Day.
That? Yeah.
They still have, they had PTSD.
So, Rosalie, you had mentioned you're a civilian. So talk to us about what it's like when someone comes in and says, well, you don't get it and you've never been there, and how you then are still, and I'm not being flippant, but how are you still qualified to work through the horrific thing that these
and
people
you're 15 years old, so what the hell?
I know,
do you know?
I look like I'm 12. That's what my sister always told me, which is a good thing, but it's a bad thing when you're trying to work with 67 year old vets who are trying to take you seriously. So I wear blazers a lot. I wear really nice glasses to look nerdy. But that's a really good question. That was something I was very worried about on my internship, is I look 12, and I'm a civilian. How are people going to deal with that? And so I asked my first patient at the conclusion of therapy how that went. And he's like, yeah, I had that thought walking down the hall. Like, what's this little girl going to do? But then he's like, I talked to you for about 10 minutes and I don't know. I just really liked you. And so then, you know, that cognitive flexibility is a good prognosis for folks that are probably going to do pretty good. When people are very resistant, I'm like, whoa, okay. But sometimes it's like that they're putting up that front to test me. A good story that I usually try to say is, well, when you go to the cancer doctor, do they have to have cancer? Like, you know, I'm not going to understand a lot of your experiences. You're the expert of that, but I know how to treat trauma. And so that's something that I'd like to do with you.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't come back. And I tell every patient at the intake, I might not be your cup of tea. So if you need to find another therapist, that's not going to hurt my feelings. And so I have a pretty good, you know, a pretty low dropout rate, but the dropout rate for PTSD for individual therapy is 32%. It's so high. And I've been for about 3 years been doing a therapy. All right. This is a big name. cognitive behavioral conjoint therapy for PTSD, CBCT for PTSD. And that's like conjoint meaning you bring your spouse in. Mm-hmm. They come in every time with you. The dropout rate for that's only 24%.
Oh, that's great.
Right. Well, and obviously, too, it's like, hey, babe, you got your appointment.
Yeah.
Did we do the homework? Are you coming?
Yeah.
It's really awesome to have homework completion.
By the way, what is the rate of infidelity with PTSD in relationships ish? I mean, do you think it's higher than the general population or not really?
I don't know that off the top of my head. I guess the one statistic I do know is that 80% of folks who have a PTSD diagnosis, end up getting divorced. Mm. And right. You know, what is the rate? The last time I checked, it was 55% of us. So two of us at this table are going to get divorced if we haven't already.
I was just going to say that.
So
I'm not starting over. Sorry, Jim, you're stuck.
And so, you know, so I would say it's pretty high, because if you're avoiding, it's very difficult if you can't be real with me to feel intimacy. And women, I mean, I'm going to pigeonhole us, like we need emotional intimacy to get ready to bring you to the room. Like we're not going to get physical unless we get our emotional cup filled.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's really helpful if we can get vets to kind of open up to this idea of what, like, okay, so this negative thought, a negative thought that you might have is like, if I show weakness, like, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right. They see it as kind of dichotic, like it's a bad thing. And well,
if you're vulnerable,
if I'm vulnerable,
yeah.
Right. And like, well, what if you open up and it's a paramount thing for your relationship? Because guess what? Who are you closest with? Well, you, Dr. Ball, right? And it's like, well, that has nothing to do with me. I know I'm pretty freaking awesome, but that's because you have put in the work. You have opened up to me and I'm still here with you. Like no judgments. And so it's like being able to do that, that really, you know, gets the wheels a turning up there that, you know, maybe I'm kind of the reason by me not wanting to talk about it to people who are civilians or talk to my wife. Maybe I could get better, you know?
I think there's a good argument for that conjoint therapy too, though, because you can let the spouse know that you need to be a place where they can be vulnerable without judgment, without getting angry. Like you can just let them have that.
Yep. And two, I think in general, I'm going to pigeonhole men. Sorry, Brody. You guys kind of want to fix the problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a problem. Who like, wants to not fix it?
So if we're talking about it, we need to fix it. So in the conjoint therapy, there's a visual and it's a television and it's got two arrows coming down. And so when you're communicating, what's the point? Are you here to share and just process or you want to solve the problem? And so just by like, where are you at before we start this conversation is really helpful. Because if you start going into problem solving mode, I'm not going to want to talk to you, you know, I'm going to shut down and I'm just going to go call my friend and bitch about you, right? You know, or something.
Yeah.
So.
No, I have a coworker that when a friend approaches her, she goes, do you want solutions or support?
That's great.
Yeah. Let me know right from the bat. Solutions or support. I'll give you whichever one.
Yeah.
But just tell me what you need right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That wouldn't be a bad thing to ask in therapy because I get people that so many people are like, can you just be more direct? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have come to me because they want something more direct. And then you have the people that don't like that at all.
They call us too blunt. I don't get it.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
Well, so I've heard it solution, support, or silence too.
Like
sometimes I just need to talk it out, and I don't need support, and I don't need any solutions.
Support and silence.
But
I like
just,
that.
I need to talk to somebody, not just my dog, about it.
Yeah.
And so
you just want someone to just stare at you.
I'm a verbal processor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me a every now and then.
Yeah. And you're good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Solution, support, silence.
I like it.
I like that a lot.
SSS.
I like that too.
Yeah.
And being able to, another important part of that therapy that we teach is that you always come back to the conversation. Like we teach taking a time out if it gets escalated, because a lot of times with vets, that irritability symptom is there. And so there might be a code word, iced mocha latte, pineapple, whatever it is that can be kind of silly. What's our safe word? And then you process it, you come back to it. And then we have that conversation. Because a lot of times that conversation just never happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Brody is more than just a beard.
He is.
He really is. There is way more to Brody.
I watch a lot of TikTok, so I think I heard that on TikTok. But yeah.
Okay. Oh, so, okay. How?
Ready? Okay.
Yeah. So, ready? Okay. So, in terms of treatment, like once you develop rapport, how open are they to really learning like all this alphabet shit, A, B, C, B, blah, 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 and then like medication? Yeah. And it's like, how do you get them invested?
In my mind, none of your vets have ever wanted to do medication. That's the story in my head. How accurate is that?
I don't know.
Is it a tough sell?
I feel like it's a range of if they want it or not.
And I'm not pooping on them. There might be very concrete reasons and very legitimate reasons why they don't want to approach medication.
Mm-hmm. See, and I guess what I find with a lot of men in general, it's more socially acceptable to go to your medical doctor and get medicine, even if it's psychotropic medicine, than it is to see 15-year-old Rosalie and go for therapy. Seriously. So I don't know. That's just been my experience.
Yeah. And two, I don't know. Sometimes people have experiences where they get snowballed during, you know, meaning like they just didn't like the way they felt when they start medication. And sometimes I think that's just not very, you just maybe didn't have the greatest like education that when you start meds, it kind of takes a few weeks and you might like have diarrhea and feel nauseous, but that usually it goes away if you give it a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So it's like you didn't really give it a chance to work. But I think with PTSD too, you know, like looking at some of the medications that you can take, like propranolol, which is a beta blocker, they're giving that a lot now. Which is kind of, it's not quite as sedative of effect as like a Xanax, but you can take that an hour before you have a podcast, for example, if you're nervous. So then it's like, well, is that avoidance though? And is that gonna maintain your symptoms? And so a lot of times if we're doing conjoint or individual, we're looking at what is maintaining your PTSD. Because most people, if you experience a trauma, you're gonna have these symptoms, but most of them go away after 6 months. Like if I crash my minivan, well, the first couple weeks I drive, it's not gonna be good, but eventually it's gonna dissipate and get better. And I'm gonna visit with Fran about it and it's gonna get better. But for some people, it doesn't get better. So then we're kind of investigative together. Is it gonna get better? And so is it hard to talk people into homework? Yes, but I'm very upfront about the dropout rate. You're not gonna wanna come. You're not gonna wanna do the things that I wanna do. So it's up to you, dude. Do you wanna do this or not? You know, now is the time.
Yeah.
And I try to use a different word than homework because I feel like it has a negative connotation.
Yeah. So what do you say it is?
Except for the nerds in the room.
Yeah. It's like, well, what are we going to call?
Yes, please. What tech books do I need?
Well, in cognitive behavioral conjoint therapy, they call it OOSAs, out of session assignments.
Oh, OOSA.
OOSAs.
Sounds like that cult lingo.
It sounds like that yogurt, Noosa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
just saying,
you got to like take it home too, that like you only spend an hour, 15 minutes of your entire week with me. And so you can come in here and BS with me, but that's not going to change you. You need to like be practicing these skills outside of session. And some of the nice thing with like the conjoint therapy is a lot of the homework isn't worksheets. It's behavioral. You're just going to sit down with your husband for 5 minutes, start the timer. And you realize like, we don't really talk, you know? And so, and I might give them what you're going to talk about. These are the questions. And I'm going to give you some skills on active listening, which let's be honest, 90% of the world sucks at listening.
They do.
I'm listening, but I'm thinking of the next story. What am I going to respond? What am I going to say?
Yeah.
Just listening to, you know, repeat back what they said. And so it's incredibly, I feel like, easy once you learn these very simple skills. Like, oh, well, you're feeling angry at me. Like, you don't have to agree with me, right? But you can just validate that I made you angry.
Do you want to hear aha? Here's an aha for Fran. Okay.
This is so, a USA or aha?
It's an aha.
It's an AHA. So, you know, Becky does meditation better than I do. And I always thought I just suck at it. And then I just thought, you know what? I am a great meditator because therapy is meditation. If you are truly listening and you are truly in that moment and you are 100% focused, that's Zen listening. It really is.
Good.
I know.
I don't think it gives you the same brain benefits of when we talk about actual meditation, right. But I can see where it could be very beneficial.
You're very present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of similarities to that. And I think, yeah. So, and it puts me in a zone. Like it puts me in a zone. I feel like I'm in this space and it's sacred. And anyway, okay, that was my little AHA. Let's carry on.
One of the things I've heard with treating trauma then, well, I've heard it with like first responders, is you have to hang out with other people who aren't either soldiers or cops or firefighter, or teachers for that matter. I mean, you got to talk about other things with other people. Is that something you recommend or is that harder for people with like straight up PTSD?
Yeah, usually we will identify what is it that you are avoiding, and then that will make you approach that. So they don't I'm like, you're not going to like me very much, but if you're not talking to civilians, how about you hang out with Brody? And you realize like, hey, he's a hell of a guy, and this was a great conversation. You got to challenge that cognition by doing the behavior, and you can't just do it once. You got to repeat the behavior. I had a person that was very controlling and like the... And my husband does this. Sorry, husband. is that like the light switches? Like if you have four of them, they all have to be down. And I'm like, well, you know what I'm going to tell you to do? Don't fix it.
Oh, yeah.
See what happens.
And
right away, your anxiety is up and then it goes down. And now he's like, I don't even care anymore. You know, after about a month, you got to give it a little time. But yeah, I think that's a great skill if I can get people to do that.
Neurons that fire together, wire together. I also want to say that, Rosalie, you gave us a ton of apps that are really helpful. And we'll throw these to our social media person.
Yes.
And we'll have her put those up on our webs or on our social media pages.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so all of these apps that will be on there are free for anybody. It's not just for vets. And so I download them and use them myself. I know when I just did a presentation here at STPA, all the therapists were writing down all the apps and I was handing them out. Like Vet Change can help with substance use. COVID Coach is my favorite because it has like mindfulness exercises. So you can just push the button. I want to listen to this for 9 minutes. And so it's pretty amazing that the VA is staying on the cusp of technology and they keep coming out. They probably have more apps than what I just looked on their website last week, so they're always coming up with new ones.
That's cool.
That is very cool.
We really, really appreciate your expertise and for coming on and sharing your knowledge. I think
we need to have her back.
Absolutely.
I think there's so much more we could have talked about. You're right. We could have gone on and on and on for like 5 hours.
Yeah.
So hopefully. Yay. Okay.
Yes. Thank you for coming. And thank you for the top of the tater.
So final question, who's going to take home top the tater?
We're going to fight for it.
You were talking about your kids white knuckling it.
I don't know that we need it in our house. But,
Your baby girl's going to get some top the tater. My spirit child.
Rosalie, real quick, if someone has listened to this and been like, oh, I think I might know somebody or I see some of that in myself, what resources, is there a phone number they can call? Do they just get their local VA for anyone out there, where would someone turn?
Yeah, it depends if you're, if they're a veteran that is no longer in the military. You can just reach out to the VA and eligibility sets them up. They have a new doctrine that you don't even have to be enrolled in the VA if you're in a mental health crisis. Just walk in the Aberdeen CBOC. But no one's there right now because I left. But they do have communications with Sioux Falls and some great providers there. Military One Source is the one if you are a current military person as well.
Military One Source.
Yeah, and we do have Dr. Holly Reich at Northern Plains Psychological Associates that deals with veterans and just if it's PTSD in general and isn't necessarily related to someone who's a vet. So.
Well, and 273-TALK, which is now 988, the National Crisis Line,
yep.
if you dial one when you call, it goes to one of three call centers. And it used to be just in New York, and all those are trained to work primarily with veterans. Perfect. And so that's a nice resource. Only 10% of the calls go to a welfare check where we're going to lock you up. So don't get worried. Right. You can just call. I have people call if they're just having a panic attack.
Like, 899.
988.
See, that's why I clarified.
988.
988.
Yep.
Said the dyslexic bearded. I was trying to catch it as she was going.
988.
It's just like 911.
But 988.
But 988. Okay. If that helps. I like that. I remember.
All right, you guys, we are the Shrinks.
And that's a wrap.